Good morning. We are going to call the January 17th, 2024 meeting of the Board of Directors of the Eastern Municipal Water District to order. Director Armstrong, would you like to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance this morning?
Please, flag. Ready to begin?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Ms. Cody, do we have anybody who wishes to make public comment for any item not on the agenda this morning?
I do not have any requests.
Okay, very good. I will ask the secretary if she could read the rules for virtual participation and then call the roll of the board.
Yes. To avoid creating acoustic feedback, please mute all your devices during the meeting unless you are speaking. Before speaking, please unmute your device and turn down the volume of any other devices that are near you and tuned into the meeting. If you have joined by phone and would like to comment on an item, please press star 9 to let our staff know and wait to be notified. When it is your turn to speak, you will hear a notification asking you to unmute your phone by pressing star 6. If you have joined by computer, you may use the chat feature in Zoom to indicate your desire to speak. When done speaking, please mute your device again. And please participate from a quiet environment so that the board can hear you when you are done speaking. And now we will do roll call. President Pauly?
Present.
Director Crono?
Here.
Director Slauson?
Here.
Director Armstrong?
Here.
Our legal counsel is present. And just to note, Director Record is absent.
Very good. Thank you for that. We will move on to item 2 this morning, which is our executive reports. Mr. Mawad.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. My report is included in your packet. Under new and ongoing items, wanted to share with the board that last week we submitted comment letters in support of the agreements to support healthy rivers and landscapes, formerly known as voluntary agreement. We submitted the letters as the State Water Resource Control Board considers an update to the water quality control plan for the San Francisco Bay Delta. In the letter that we submitted, we note that the agreements present an opportunity to move away from a one-size-fits-all regulatory approach as proposed by the State Board and instead tailor solutions that account for the unique characteristics of the various water users in the Delta and Southern California that are dependent on water deliveries from the State Water Project. The agreements offer a promising path forward by fostering cooperation among diverse stakeholders, including ag, environmental, and urban interest. Just to note also, we did sign on to a coalition letter with the Southern California Water Coalition that highlighted some of the same comments that we provided in our own letter to the State Board. Next, I wanted to share with you an update on various developments on the LAFCO reorganization of Fallbrook PUD that has been annexed to EMWD as of January 1st. After this board's action at the last board meeting to approve a water supply agreement on January 3rd, on January 4th, the Fallbrook PUD held a special board meeting and approved a water supply agreement as well. In addition, on January 8th, the Metropolitan General Manager responded to our request to effectuate the implementation to annex Fallbrook PUD as part of EMWD, and Metropolitan has agreed that billing as of January 1st for the two turnouts on the San Diego Pipeline number 4 that Fallbrook will be served off of will in fact be transferred to EMWD. The activities that took place during the latter part of the year as well as after this board's action has also involved, in addition to Metropolitan, the San Diego County Water Authority has been very much part of the conversations that we've had along with our team, operational team, and billing team. Those activities are going to continue. We are holding additional meetings with Metropolitan as well as their legal counsel and our operational team to administer the remaining tasks that need to be conducted to fully annex Fallbrook PUD into Eastern. I will also note that on January 9th, the Metropolitan staff provided an update to the Metropolitan Board as far as assessed valuations, and as a result of the Fallbrook PUD annexation to Eastern, our assessed valuation and weighted vote was adjusted slightly from 2.99% to 3.12%. So as we continue to advance these efforts, we'll be back in front of the board providing you an update accordingly. Next, I wanted to share with the board that last week, myself and our executive team met with the city of Paris, city manager and their executive team. We provided a coordinated update on the work plan that is being developed for the consolidation of the city's water and sewer system to EMWD. There are a number of elements that are being developed, including financial, billing, property transfers, legal considerations, and other regulatory matters. So as we work through those plans, we are anticipating to bring forward to your consideration in February an MOU that will essentially approve the consolidation of the city's water and sewer system, provided that certain provisions are fulfilled, including, as I mentioned, all the customer billing transfers, the property transfers, and other matters that have to be addressed within a matter of several months beyond that MOU approval. So we are coordinating that closely with the city team, and the city council is also expected to consider the same MOU in February as well. Under items of interest to the board, wanted to note that our very own John Worth on January 8th provided a comment at Metropolitan's One Water Committee regarding our utilization of the local resource program and specifically our success with implementation of our accelerated retrofit program. And most recently, the recycled water expansion that we've had in French Valley and other parts of our service area. Metropolitan likes to showcase success of its member agencies, and I think John just did a fantastic job in highlighting our efforts to convert customers to recycled water and, frankly, utilizing Metropolitan's local resource program. Next, I wanted to share with you that we have been coordinating with the Las Virgenes Municipal Water District on the ocean well desalination technology. Essentially, we have agreed to join Las Virgenes as a co-applicant for Metropolitan's Future Supply Actions Program. Las Virgenes is proposing to pilot the ocean well technology to evaluate this emerging technology to see whether it would be successful for full implementation. Essentially, what this technology entails is submerged reverse osmosis, taking advantage of the hydrostatic pressure of the ocean to reduce the energy requirements of RO technology, as well as it would require significantly less real estate to potentially implement this type of water supply solution. So we're joining Las Virgenes in proposing a pilot to Metropolitan, and we will be part of that effort, including we'll be receiving the data and be able to evaluate whether that technology is viable for, frankly, not only Las Virgenes and Eastern, but for the entire industry. Along those lines, we have committed to provide about $10,000 worth of financial support to advance the pilot study. And finally, I wanted to share with the board, we're very pleased that all four of our House Congressman Calvert, Takano, Ruiz, and Issa signed on to advance our Water Resource Development Act language request to the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. Our request is to increase our WRDA authorization from $50 million to $100 million, which will assist us in further advancing our brackish desalination program. We're very pleased with the unanimous support we received from our entire congressional delegation. And this is just one more step in helping us secure our position to further expand our desalination program. With that, be happy to answer any question that the board may have.
Any questions? All right. Thank you very much. Laura, do you have anything for us this morning?
Nothing this morning.
Nick?
Nothing.
Matt?
I'll just give you one last groundwater recharge update. In 2023, we recharged a total of 16,237 acre feet, and we were able to pre-deliver 1,852 acre feet towards 2025. So we made some good progress. We're currently in the process of getting the IRRP ready and cleaned out in case we have a good rainy season and recharge starts again. We'll be ready for that. recycled water demands, unfortunately, have been a pretty low 6 or 8 MGD, and storage did fill up. So we did begin a discharge of recycled water the first week of January. And so far this year, we're up to 1,260 acre feet of recycled water that's been discharged. So we're keeping our eye on levels and trying to keep storage as full as possible. And we'll cease discharge as soon as demands increase.
All right. Thank you. Any questions for Matt? Thank you very much. That will take us to item three this morning, which is our consent calendar. Do any members of the board wish to have a pull an item for separate vote or separate discussion?
Yes. Item D, I'd like to abstain. KB Home has been a client of my company.
All right. Can I get then a motion for all but item D?
Second.
Second by Director Armstrong. I get a roll call vote, please.
President Pauley?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 4-0. Director Record absent. I will note that Director Slauson has left the dais.
I'll move item D.
Item D moved by Director Corona, second by Director Armstrong. I get a roll call vote, please.
President Pauley?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Passes 3-0 with Director Record absent and Director Slauson not participating in the vote. We'll move on to item 4 this morning, which is our action calendar. Item 4A is to approve and authorize amendment of understanding with the Nuevo Water Company and adopt an ordinance amending Eastern Municipal Water District's consolidated schedule of rates, fees, and charges. Mr. Adams, good morning.
Good morning, President Pauley, members of the board. So as mentioned this morning, we have a proposed amendment to the Nuevo Water MOU with Eastern and a update to the wholesale rate that we provide Nuevo. So just a quick back or just quickly on the background. So in the 1990s, salinity levels in the Lakeview Basin, which serves Nuevo, had increased. Eastern and Nuevo performed certain studies to evaluate that, and based on those studies, ultimately established the MOU to provide wholesale water to Nuevo for blending. Just quickly on the agreement, a couple of components. So the agreement was approved finally in August of 2000. There was an additional letter of agreement in 2001. At the time, we did provide a rate that was comparable to all sub-agency rates, which was $525 an acre foot. That rate is currently what we consider our non-residential, non-tiered rate. Certainly, we've implemented tiered rates since then, but for that, for the wholesale rate, it's based on the non-residential, non-tiered rate. Since Eastern was putting in the infrastructure to serve Nuevo, Nuevo agreed to purchase no less than 150 acre-feet per year for blending. Because of the less groundwater pumping at Lakeview Basin, we found benefit to that and provided a $65 credit to Nuevo off of that $525 rate. As mentioned, really meant to improve their water standards for drinking. As mentioned, since they did not put any, since we put the infrastructure, they did not put any capital infrastructure or pay for any capital and not have connection fees at the time. Like all of our sub-agencies, we do receive property tax and standby charges from the Nuevo service area. And similar to other wholesale agencies, we do not charge the fixed charges, so daily service charges and water supply reliability. They do only pay the commodity rate for the water that we provide to them. So this map shows you the Nuevo service area to the right. We also highlight some of the facilities that are supporting them. They do get their water from the Paris filtration plant. There's a couple boosters and a couple tanks that help serve them. We did have 10 miles of pipeline, or there is 10 miles of pipeline that does serve them. Currently, they only take water from 1 meter, and that's the lower meter. The meter at the top was used at the beginning of the agreement, but has been transitioned to the bottom agreement. For the board, just for your benefit, just to talk about demands, during the high months, summer through early fall, 50 acre feet per month, and then we talk about winter and spring, about 27 acre feet over the past 5 years. So based on the comprehensive cost of service study that was completed last spring and ultimately the board approving rates for 2024-2025, the effective rate increase for Nuevo was 9.1%. If you recall, for our residential customers with a comprehensive bill for both water and sewer, the average increase was about 6.5% for each year. The cost of service, certain rates changed based on the cost of service methodology. For wholesale water in general, it was 8.7%, but because the credit did not adjust, their actual increase was 9.1%. So in late June, early July, as part of their planning process, they had reached out about the rate increase and wanted to have information provided on the basis for the increase, in which at that time we had provided them the cost of service and the projected rate increases for the next 2 years. In September, we did meet with the staff, or EMW staff met with Nuevo to discuss not just the credit, but you know the background on the agreement and how the credit was actually established. In October, we did receive a formal request from Nuevo asking for that credit to be adjusted or indexed going forward. And then in December, we did meet with them, discussed options to come up with what would be a reasonable and fair increase to that credit. So really highlighting the agreement, this is really covered in Section 2 of the agreement, and the first part is what I highlight at the top, which is really that sub-agency rate. And what I want to highlight was it notes as amended from time to time. So as the board knows, we amend rates really on an annual basis. And so over the 22 years, that rate has increased over the $525. The second highlighted area is to show the basis of the credit, which it highlights that they're programmed to reduce the pumping in the Lakeview Ground Basin would benefit Eastern. And at that time, we put the credit at $65, which is highlighted in red. What I want to highlight is that there is no adjustment or any mention of adjusting that $65 rate. So that $65 rate is the same rate that's in effect as of today. So I know this is a little small in detail, but shows you the rates since 2000, since the MOU. And what I want to highlight is, first, in the blue, the EMWD wholesale rate. So it's gone from 525 up to 1442, and that average increase has been 4.6% over that 23 years. In the purple, you can see that $65 credit has stayed the same. When this MOU was put in place, the credit was over 12% of the effective wholesale rate at the time that credit was. Over time with the increase, that percentage has declined, and last year it was effectively 4.5%. Just for point of reference, we provided the MWD Tier 1 treated rate, and this is just the commodity. So certainly you can see that on average our rate for wholesale has increased very similar to the treated rate for MET. But you can see the Nuevo at 5%. And that's really driven because the credit has not changed. With that said, part of the options was to fix that credit from $65, and what was proposed and is proposed as part of this board action is to make it 5% going forward. So the credit would be 5% for Nuevo going forward. So just this bar graph really just shows you how the rates have changed over the last 10 years. You can see consistently that the rates, are similar to how MET has increased their rates. What I want to highlight in the red is that's the current rates that are currently in effect for January 2024 and for January 2025. Those would be adjusted. The $1,503 would be adjusted by $13 down, so it's $1,489, if I recall. So just to mention the 150 acre feet, they have far exceeded that minimum requirement. You can see in the first 10 years that they almost hit 1,000 acre feet in 2007, but starting in 2011, that number has come down. Over the past 5 years, they've averaged about 474 acre-feet. The history, their average is about 560 acre-feet. So in summary, EMWD and Nuevo continue to have a strong relationship. They continue to need imported water for blending, and it is reasonable to provide a credit that adjusts as we adjust rates. You can see here, the average on the right, again, the 474, that the revenue that we receive in commodity is about $600,000 annually. With this adjustment going from $65 to 5%, the increased credit that they would receive based on that average demand would be $6,300 for this year and then $8,800 in 2025. And so I just mentioned that effectively it will be 95% of the wholesale rate. With that, what's in front of the board for approval is authorizing the GM to approve that amendment, making the credit from $65 to 5%, and then, of course, adopting an ordinance to approve those changes, so reducing the rate in 2024 from $1,503 down to $1,489, and then from $1,607 down to $1,589. And before I open up for questions, I do want to note that we have representatives from Nuevo. Should you have any questions, I understand that the president would like to make a few comments as well. So with that,
why don't we do questions for Mr. Adams, then we'll bring up our board member from Nuevo. Any questions for Mr. Adams on this?
No, we heard this in committee.
Yes. So, agreement. Okay, with that, would either of our folks from Nuevo, the floor is yours.
President Paul, if I can introduce the president of the Nuevo Water Company, Scott Sewell, and also the general manager, Cindy Robbins, is here as well to answer any questions you may have.
Appreciate both you being here today.
Well, thank you for having us. President Pauly and the entire EMWD board, General Manager Mawad, and your executive team and staff, thank you for having us today. It is my pleasure to address you today on behalf of Nuevo Water Company. As its board president, I want to express our sincere gratitude for the ongoing partnership we have to share with Eastern Municipal Water District, particularly for the collaboration efforts that have led to this new billing agreement. This amendment to this agreement plays a pivotal role in Nuevo's ability to maintain responsible spending. In these times of significant economic inflation, it enables us to secure the best possible pricing for retail water purchases. This, in turn, ensures that we can continue to provide safe, high-quality water to our shareholders at affordable pricing. This agreement is not merely a financial agreement, it is a commitment to the well-being of our community during the challenging economic conditions and a reflection of our two agencies' joint dedication to addressing the unique water needs of our Nuevo community. Furthermore, this updated agreement will provide Nuevo Water Company with the financial flexibility necessary to maintain the update of our critical infrastructure. We are emphasizing the importance of the relationship between us and EMWD. Acknowledging and appreciating your willingness to collaborate and work together to address this evolving need for our shareholders. So to conclude this, we look forward to the board's approval of this agreement, which not only reflects a commitment to financial responsibility, but also strengthens the foundation of our essential services we collectively and collaboratively provide to our community. We thank you for your support and your partnership. Thank you for having us today.
Thank you. I will also note that this year we are going to begin having a ad hoc committee meeting between our two agencies so that we can further work through issues and things like this. So appreciate your participation in that, too, and appreciate both you being here today.
Thank you. Ms. Robbins, who is our general manager, her and I will be happy to be part of that committee.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Any questions on this item? With that, since it's in my division, I'm going to go ahead and make the motion on this.
I'll second it.
Second it by Director Slauson. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 4-0. Director Record absent. Again, thank you both for being here.
Thank you for having us, and thank you for the commitment.
Thank you. All right. We will go on to item B this morning, which is to approve and authorize amended and restated agreement with the County of Riverside for the American Rescue Plan Act funding for the extension of sewer on Highway 74. Mr. Bates.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. Pleasure to be with you today. The item for your consideration, again, is an amendment to an ARPA agreement with the County of Riverside. A little background on ARPA. It was signed into law in March of 2021 in response to the COVID pandemic. About $362 billion was put into the bill for that funding, of which the County of Riverside received $479 million. There are two very important dates within the funding agreement. The county must provide the federal government the appropriations of where they're going to spend the money by December of 2024, and then the money must be expended by December of 2026. Supervisor Jeffries has been kind enough to provide some additional funding for our extension of sewer to Highway 74 project, and so I will go into that in more detail. Our current funding for the project, the agreement was executed in August of 2023, and it provides funding for the extension of sewer project along Highway 74 in order to provide sewer to the county's planning area 6. The county's current funding amount is roughly $7.25 million. That does include a 25% contingency. And this $7.25 million funds two alignments. There's the alignment along Highway 74, which is our preferred alignment, and there is an alternate alignment along Ellis Avenue that was incorporated in the event the Highway 74 alignment was deemed infeasible. The Highway 74 alignment, you can see here in green, kind of extends along Highway 74 from Navajo out to Ellis, and the purple is the county's planning area 6. The Ellis Avenue alignment extends from along Ellis Avenue to roughly that same point. And again, this alignment was identified in the event the Highway 74 alignment was infeasible. As part of the City of Paris consolidation, in March of 2022, the district executed an MOU with the city to consider the consolidation in order to perform certain analysis and looking at what that consolidation effort would take. And the county's additional funding that the board will be considering today is in support of that consolidation effort. Through a comprehensive evaluation performed jointly by Eastern and the city, an acquisition balance of roughly $7.9 million was identified in order for the consolidation to occur. The results of that analysis and the regional benefits to the community and the county's planning area 6, the county, the city, and Eastern elected to share in that $7.9 million evenly, resulting in the county's share, our share, and the city's share each to be $2.63 million. The county has decided to provide us their share of the funding through ARPA, and applying that $2.63 million to the preferred alignment, which is along Highway 74. The reason that the funding is only eligible to the northerly alignment along Highway 74 is that is the alignment we would advance should the consolidation occur. If the consolidation were not to occur, we would then advance the Ellis Avenue alignment, and then the funding obviously wouldn't be eligible because we wouldn't have consolidated with the City of Paris. And then, as Joe mentioned, we do plan on bringing an item to the board in February, which will outline the terms in order to perfect the transfer, which is basically a work plan, just outlining tasks for us to complete. So for the Highway 74 project, each alignment is roughly $10.25 million. You can see the current funding commitment is the 7.25. With the additional funding of 2.63, would bring the total funding eligible for the northerly alignment to roughly $9.9 million. There is still some additional cost beyond the 9.9 that the district would have to absorb. That's roughly $370,000. If we do not consolidate, the funding obviously as part of this item would not be eligible for Ellis. So as you can see, it's not applicable. And so we have roughly a $3 million funding gap if we were to advance the Ellis Avenue alignment. And just to note, the County Board of Supervisors, I got an update. They'll actually be considering this item at next week's board meeting, not on the 30th. So it'll be next Tuesday at the County Board of Supervisor meeting. In summary, the county alone has funded 11 projects, totaling with this action roughly $31 million. Including the City of Murrieta's funding for Los Alamos, we have a total of 12 projects at roughly $34 million in ARPA funding to provide service to our ratepayers. So with that, Staff recommends that the board approve the item and authorize the general manager to execute this amended and restated agreement for the additional funding towards Highway 74. And with that, be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Mawad?
President Pauly, if I can, thank you, Matt. And I just wanted to acknowledge Matt and the whole team for working with the county on this very important item. As we continue to put all the components together for the consolidation with the city of Paris, the county's willingness to step up and provide us with financial support to make it a reality is really key to making this entire arrangement work. In the absence of this ARPA funding, we would have entered into an agreement with the county for what they term EFID, or Enhanced Infrastructure Funding District, which would have taken years for the financial contribution to be realized. So we're very pleased that the county had available ARPA funding that they can contribute towards the consolidation. I'm just very pleased with where things are lining up, and as we indicated before, we'll be bringing the MOU for the consolidation next month, but I just want to highlight this is a very important part of our ability to accomplish this. Thanks.
Any questions on this item?
No.
Would you like to move it?
Director,
second by Director Armstrong. Megan, a roll call vote, please.
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. Thank you, Mr. Bates, for the presentation. We will move on to item C, which is to approve and authorize the third amendment to the cooperative agreement with the Elsinore Valley Municipal Water District for Upper Temescal Valley Salt and Nutrient Management Plan, an appropriation of $499,000. Good morning.
Good morning, President Pauly, directors. My name is Anthony Bucine. I am the Director of Environmental Regulatory Compliance. Here to present on the cooperative agreement. Next slide, please.
You control it.
Oh, this is, sorry, first time, guys. Bear with me. Okay, quick overview of what we'll discuss. Background on the Upper Temescal Valley, the cooperative agreements with Elsinore Valley Municipal Water District, an overview of the Salt and Nutrient Management Plan, and then the final recommendation. This figure right here depicts the Upper Temescal Valley. The red line outlines the Upper Temescal Valley Groundwater Management Zone. Within that zone, you can see there are three groundwater management zones identified: the Bedford GMZ, Lee Lake, and Warm Springs GMZs. These have since been consolidated and are collectively referred to as the Upper Temescal Valley Groundwater Management Zone. The bottom right-hand corner is a purple circle. That is where Eastern Municipal Water District's discharge from the reclamation facilities enters into Temescal Creek. Right next to it is the Elsinore Valley Regional facilities discharge to either Lake Elsinore or Temescal Creek. It's a small basin, so it's greatly impacted by climatic conditions. During wet years, water quality tends to improve. During dry years, tends to degrade. As you know, Eastern Municipal Water District has a National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System permit. This regulates the discharge to Temescal Creek from the reclamation facilities. It sets limits such as the 52.5 million gallons per day of discharge volume allowance on a seasonal basis, along with the total dissolved solids limit of 650 milligrams per liter. Likewise, Elsinore Valley Municipal Water District has an NPDES permit that regulates its discharge to Lake Elsinore or Temescal Creek. Their TDS limit is slightly higher at 700 milligrams per liter. So why are we here? Why do we need this amendment and agreement? What's the purpose of a salt and nutrient management plan? Well,
all questions I was about to ask.
Perfect. I was hoping you would.
Okay.
So both Eastern Municipal Water District and Elsinore Valley Municipal Water District have TDS limits, but they're not scientifically based. These led to violations occurring, which then prompted the State Water Resource Control Board requesting action. That action was the salt and nutrient management plan. This mitigated all those past violations and fines. Usually when you have water quality limits and NPDES permit, it's scientifically based. In our case, the Upper Temescal Valley does not have a robust data set to build upon, so it was best judgment used to establish those limits. Now we have a salt and nutrient management plan. The whole purpose of it is to basically get that robust scientifically based data set and have some hard objectives we can put a permit limit to. In 2017, the Santa Ana Regional Water Quality Control Board approved the Upper Temescal Valley Salt and Nutrient Management Plan. And then in 2020, the water quality objectives of 820 milligrams per liter for TDS and 7.9 milligrams per liter for nitrate were incorporated into the Santa Ana Regional Water Quality Control Board's basin plan for the Upper Temescal Valley. And not to say we're lucky, but we're fortunate in the sense that Elsinore Valley is on the same boat as us, so we have this ability to cost share. This is what brought forth the cooperative agreements. The original one was approved in 2013 to develop the salt nutrient management plan. There were then the First Amendment and the supplemental increases from 2015 to 2018 for the continued development of the salt nutrient management plan and implementation through 2020. The most current amendment was the Second Amendment, and this was, again, for continued implementation of the salt and nutrient management plan from 2021 to 2023. And this brings us here today to the third cooperative agreement amendment. EMWD's cost share for this is going to be $499,058. The purpose of the agreement is for us and Elsinore to work together on continuing actions identified in the salt and nutrient management plan, including participating in joint water quality monitoring and reporting, conducting triannual ambient water quality recomputation and reporting, which includes recycled water policy requirements. And then the identified management actions include investigation and or monitoring of additional sites, the Lee Lake Dam outflow measurement and analysis of low-level data, and the development and implementation of the salt offset plan, which includes model development. This table here summarizes the project cost. The bottom row highlighted in blue and that last column highlighted in blue represent Eastern's cost. It totals for a three-year period from 2024 through 2026, $499,058. And then finally, the recommendation is for the board to approve and authorize the following execution by the general manager or his designee of the Third Amendment of the Cooperative Agreement with Elsinore Valley Municipal Water District for implementing the Upper Temescal Valley Salt and Nutrient Management Plan for the years 2024 through 2026 with an appropriation of $499,058. Any questions?
Any questions? Director Armstrong.
I just am curious on how is it determined that we would participate at 50%?
My assumption is that it's probably a volume-based allocation, but us being the only other agency other than Elsinore that actually discharges there with a requirement like this, I would have to look back, though, to give you probably a better answer.
Yeah, I think that's correct, Dr. Armstrong. It's just us and Elsinore who have this need, and since we're both required to comply with the regional board PDS threshold, we decided about a decade ago to pursue this path. And as Anthony mentioned, we started back in 2013 is when this process initiated. And I think this is a much preferred pathway is to scientifically determine the assimilative capacity of the basin and essentially through collection of data and implementing the process. Essentially, we're not having to pay fines or possibly even have to remove the salts from the recycled water that is discharged. So this is a much more preferred pathway that I think both us and Elsinore see the value. And it is for that reason that we've continued to work cooperatively with the Regional Water Quality Control Board. But to your question, it's simply because us and Elsinore are the only two agencies that are discharging water to Temescal.
Thank you. Director Slauson.
So either agency would be required to have a management plan without the other.
That's correct. We're both in the same position from a regulatory standpoint. As Anthony mentioned, for whatever reason, they had a slightly higher TDS limit on their permit. That's just a legacy issue, but it's really respective because, as indicated here, what the study showed is that the assimilative capacity could accommodate a higher TDS amount. So that's what we're working towards.
Motion by Director Corona, second by Director Slauson. Megan, roll call vote, please.
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. Nice job on the presentation. All right, we will go on to item 5, which is our informational items. And first up is the 2024 plan of finance. It appears, Mr. Hayes, you are going to lead us in that this morning.
Yes. Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. I'm honored to be here today to present the 2024 Plan of Finance to the Board of Directors. This is an annual item where we provide a brief market update, recap and highlights of our special funding program, which includes our CFDs and our assessment districts, and then include a plan of finance for the coming year. Then we also do the same for our general district side, recap and highlights of last year, as well as what's upcoming this year. Start off with a brief market update. 2023 rates remained elevated. There were some increases in the third quarter due to comments the Federal Reserve made, and then was followed by significant decreases in the fourth quarter as rate cuts were anticipated next year. Rates remained or ended the year similar to where they started. Looking to 2024 and beyond, on the right-hand side, as noted, economists forecast a slower growth. I put in here that the market expects rate cuts to occur as early as March, but it's more looking like it'll be in May.
Can we hold you to that?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. All right. No. But that's what it's looking like, and you know, there's an economist tell you one thing, and there's another thing, another economist to tell you the exact opposite. So, you know, you can't hold me to it, unfortunately. And then looking at the chart on the right hand side, this just shows a range of the AAA MMD through maturities 1 through 30. As you could see, as noted in blue, those are the current rates. The bars are the 10-year average. Or the 10-year range, and then the yellow is the average. So all this to say is current rates remain elevated, not at the highest that they've been, but they remain elevated and higher than average over the past 10 years. Now looking at short-term rates, these are mainly what variable rate debt is based off of. I graphed the SIFMA index, which is a 7-day high-grade index for tax-exempt variable rate debt. This is what the district's variable rate debt and other municipal agencies' variable rate debt most often is based off of, the SIFMA index compared to. As you could see, over the 4 years, there's been increase, or the 3 years here shown. Rates ended the year where they started or slightly higher, and there were some volatility throughout the year. Since the point here that's graphed on this slide, I've checked rates the last couple weeks since this slide was prepared, and rates have reset slightly below these areas. It was 3% the first week of January, and then they reset down to about 2% the second week of January. Now, moving on to the special funding recap and highlights, happy to report we issued bonds for 4 community facilities districts. And as the board knows, when we establish a CFD, we usually tax at the max rate. It helps to generate cash, gets incoming homeowners used to what the taxes are going to be. And then as part of the district's debt policy, we will issue bonds and then reduce that debt service, or reduce the levy to just debt service. So it provides a savings to the property owners once we issue bonds. Now, I recapped in the table here at the top of the slide really what the summary is for the number of parcels of each CFD and the average savings. And so anyone that purchased a home within these CFDs, after the bonds were issued, their tax, their annual tax was reduced fairly considerably. And the total here, to save everyone some head math, is about 770 homes. Now, also happy to report, we had a successful levy enrollment process with the county back in August. We also entered into 11 joint community facility districts, and then we formed 4 new CFDs, including our 100th CFD. Thought it was appropriate to take a look at our first CFD. This is the last development that occurred in that CFD. Very pleasant, robust neighborhood in French Valley. Now, moving on to some analysis that we remain to keep tabs on, if you will. And I presented this to the board in the last plan of finance. There is a series of bonds that have some savings if we were to refund those CFDs. And we are paying attention to it, tracking the savings potential. I've charted four different dates and time and the potential savings there. Just want to highlight, it's over 20 CFDs, close to 6,000 homes. The par outstanding, very large, about $48 million. And the last update we received back in November, the savings was right around 5.3% blended. Now, each CFD will save a different amount, but that's the blended amount. Our debt policy states that a current refunding should achieve a savings of 4%. Now, you may observe that this fits within that parameter, but based on comments earlier and what the market is anticipating with rates coming down, it only benefits the district and these homeowners to wait a little bit until those savings increase. And so the January 2023 column is what I presented to the board last year. Timing wasn't right. As you recall, a month or two later, rates spiked and that savings window essentially disappeared on us. But we are keeping track of it, and we will present an item to the board once the timing is right. Now, moving on to the 2024 plan of finance for our special funding side, it's looking to be a busy year for the team. The three CFDs highlighted here are currently in the queue for a planned bond issuance. Now, we recently received additional guidance from legal counsel, bond counsel, and our municipal advisor that the much-discussed, highly contentious taxpayer initiative, Taxpayer Protection Act, that'll be on the ballot for in this November, has certain provisions where the current terms, as are defined in the bill or the ballot measure, will be retroactive to January 1st, 2022. And they will impact special taxes and charges elections that have occurred after that date. Now, I'll make this short, but I'm happy to answer any questions on this. And we also have bond counsel on the call. We were on a call yesterday, and a representative from Alishire, Steve's firm, was on the call as well with us. And just to highlight, this will likely impact certain CFDs that were formed or had bonds issued after that retroactive date. And so for any CFD that fits within that realm, we are pausing bond issues. We really just don't want to increase the district's risk or the CFD's risk until a solution is provided or until those concerns are resolved. Now, the bond council community is actively addressing or working on mitigating measures to protect the development community, public agencies that they represent, and in some degree, homeowners that are within these CFDs. And they are actively engaging the development community, BIA, to pursue appropriate solutions. Now, for future CFD formations, we plan to incorporate language or amend the process to where that formation would abide by the new stipulations in the ballot measure. And so those going forward on a going forward basis would be safe and of no risk to the district. Now, there is no issue from the bond council community of abiding by the new ballot measure. Where it becomes tricky is the retroactive provision for CFDs that were already voted on by the landowners or bonds already issued. There's issues of that retroactive date, and that's really, I think, what is in discussion, and the mitigating measures are trying to be figured out, essentially. I'll pause there for any questions. And like I said, we have Brad Neal from Stradling on the line. He's happy to jump in if need be, but hopefully I can answer your guys' questions.
To the board, I just would like to add that all of this is still in what I consider under construction. There's so many unknowns at this point that we're still trying to figure it out. We've been working with bond counsel. We're going to give Joe an update in a couple weeks. So I think right now it's a bit premature, but bond counsel has recommended that we postpone any bond issuances at this point, and we concur until we have further information as far as how they're proceeding. And all the bond councils are working together. So I just wanted to let you know that this came to light yesterday for me. So this is kind of really still very fresh, and we plan to kind of keep the board updated as this progresses.
Director Armstrong?
Well, just given that and the and how it's still undefined, I would just wonder if, as you're keeping us updated, even with the admin committee, maybe we could do a deeper dive into it at the next admin
committee. I would agree, and that's what we've kind of recommended. Thomas is going to put together a kind of a PowerPoint presentation on what we know today, what the bond councils are planning. They're trying a few different approaches so that we don't have to wait till November, the outcome of the election. So there's a lot in the works, and yes, I would agree that we'd like to bring something back to the admin committee. Wanted to present something to Joe because this is the first I think he's hearing about it too. So
never a good thing.
Yeah. So but it was came to light yesterday, and we knew we were doing this presentation today.
Great.
Yeah, and you may recall from earlier in the year where we had this issue of this, the same initiative with the retroactive application. And I don't know if this will jog your memory, but the issue was adopting things by resolution or by ordinance. And this initiative requires that things be adopted by ordinance. So rates and fees, for example, we use an ordinance this time to kind of protect against this, because it really is a unique situation where something that's going to be voted on in 2024 affects what you did in 2022. So it's kind of a crazy situation we're trying to wrestle with. But we've kind of covered it as to rates, but... Right. Again, as to CFDs and bonds, it's a little trickier, I think.
The only
Director Slauson had a question, I think.
He answered my question.
Okay,
thank you.
Excellent. Steve's a mind reader. I mean, I would concur as a member of the admin committee. I'd love to deep dive a little into this in the future on it. I'm still a little confused. I'm not an attorney, but in this kind of ex post facto law that you can't make up laws that go backwards?
The general rule, yes. But this is an initiative which I think is going to amend the Constitution.
Yes.
Okay.
But I believe that it's great that you're informed in case we have, you know, individuals from the development community or whoever approach you. And you kind of have some basic knowledge at this point. But going forward, we'll make sure to get you updated as far as what we know and how it's progressing.
This sounds like a fine item for the February or March admin committee.
Yes, and I'm in the process of analyzing which Eastern CFDs fit into which category so we can gauge what risk there is and the appropriate solutions. Had I known this at admin 2 weeks ago, I certainly would have included it, so my apologies. We did find out about it yesterday. Thought it was appropriate to mention today in case over the weekend you run into someone and they say, hey, what's going on? Staff's on top of it. We'll know, you know, in a month or two, and just wanted to, you know, put you guys at ease if it comes up.
Very good. Continue on.
Thank you. Moving on, just close this slide here. We also have several JCFAs, Joint Community Facility Districts, in process with partner agencies. Just to relate it to the issue I just discussed, with the JCFA, no risk to the district. It's really the lead agency that needs to take care of those. But we will be doing a thorough review of JCFA requests and asking the questions on what are you guys doing to address this. Now, moving on to the general district side, 2023 recap and highlights. Our underwriter services pool was extended in March of 2023 with board approval. We also had a series of bonds mature, $6.1 million in July of 2023. Then also, as Laura mentioned to the board a couple months ago, Fitch Ratings maintained its AAA rating and stable outlook on the district's outstanding debt. We were also approached by Moody's shortly after Fitch, and they wanted to share with us their updated methodology for environmental social governance profile scores. They plan to publish scores in 2024 for public agencies that are rated by Moody's. We do have an outstanding rating by Moody's that we received back in 2016. That was the last time we pursued Moody's for a rating. So we do have an outstanding rating. I think highlight here is that Eastern's ESG profile has a neutral to low impact on our credit rating. As the board knows, we have a AAA credit rating, and the ESG profile very minimally impacts that. I think the other highlight is staff was able to provide Moody's a lot of great information on what the district is up to. We shared with them our recent 2023 strategic priorities progress report. If you say that too many times in a row, it starts tripping up, and it happens to me as well.
Can I interrupt you for one second?
Yes.
This is just me. Shouldn't our credit score and credit rating be based on our ability to repay debt?
Yes, and it is. And this just says that our ESG profile, if you will.
Which has nothing to do with our ability to repay debt, correct?
Correct.
Okay. I just want to clarify in case I was a little behind the times.
Yes. Neutral to low impact. And I think what also is important to note, Eastern, as a California water agency, we ranked amongst the same area as other California water agencies. That is to say, California Water Agency, their ESG profile doesn't positively impact the credit score. It has a neutral to low impact, as shown on the scale on the left-hand side.
But the social category with some of the boxes in there are things that could impact their view on our ability to repay debt. Demographics, education, you know, those types of things. They do look at that and say, you know, can the agency repay its debt? And I think those factor greatly into your rating.
And when we looked at the categories, and I included them here on the right, water management, you know, their safety, you know, everything that Eastern's already doing really just, you know, echoes, you know, our commitment to sustainability, affordability, accountability, which we're doing great.
And to Director Armstrong's comment, I appreciate that very much. I just, historically, I know Eastern's repaid its debt for, I think, since 1950, long before anyone came up with the ESG score. So I just want to say, historically, we've been pretty good about doing that and probably deserve a good credit rating before some social engineering folks came up with this. But your point is taken. It is important and should not be discounted.
Well, I think that they've always looked at those. They might be categorizing them differently. But I know at Rancho, we always, like, demographics was a hard thing because of the size of our agency compared to Eastern with the much larger population. They've always looked at those things in education. They've always, but now maybe they're in different categories how they're doing it. But.
And President Pauly, if I can add, aside from the credit rating, EMWD has been a leader when it comes to sustainability and affordability and frankly governance and accountability issues. And that was highlighted in our report, the 2023 Strategic Priorities Progress Report that Thomas is referring to. But for me, at least, the value of our leadership position on those issues is also important when we go up to Sacramento and we seek funding on various projects, initiatives, as well as when you go back to Washington, D.C. So I sort of look at our efforts on those fronts as really separate from the credibility, or the credit rating issue, but we're still a leader on many of those issues that you highlighted.
I agree. I am proud of this agency for being a leader on all of it. I just have an issue when some of the credit rating agencies look at things on repaying debt that has nothing to do with, that does not take in our track record and financial ability to repay debt and start adding in other issues that aren't really part of that. But that's just me.
I have a question. Haven't there been a number of states that have actually withdrawn their retirement funds from some of the companies that are focusing on this? Because they're focusing and the profit isn't the same. And that's kind of been the result. But anyway.
Just mixing finance with other things in our society. But continue on.
Thank you. Moving on to my favorite slide here in this deck, and this came to be from a president asked by you, President Pauly, back in September. And the question was, how does our investment portfolio perform compared to our variable rate debt portfolio? I've always said it since I've been here, our investment portfolio, or more specifically our liquidity accounts, act as a natural hedge to our variable rate debt accounts or issuances. And summarized here, as short-term interest rates rise, interest income generated from short-term investments increase, and so does the debt service from variable rate debt instruments. Now, EMWD's rates for liquid investments have very much outperformed the rates we paid on our debt service for variable rate debt. And it's shown graphically in this slide. Now this is each line is a blended rate of the applicable securities within that rate. So green would be our investment securities that are liquid, that could be retrieved within a day's notice. And then the blue is a variable rate debt that we have. We have two series of variable rate debt. Now, as interest rates dived and came close to zero, you could see that hedge effectiveness was very minimal. They worked in conjunction with each other. There are a couple fees that we pay on top of the variable rate debt, which slightly increased the blue line above the green line. If we subtract those fees out, then the rates themselves would perform very similarly. Now, as rates start to increase, and as they did in such a sharp fashion, that hedge effectiveness continues to grow as our investment rates react faster and to a larger degree. And so the interest income that's generated offsets by a larger margin, the debt service that we pay on the variable rate debt. And so I just want to thank President Pauly for asking the question and providing me the opportunity and staff to dive into the details and share this information. Just confirms that I'm not a liar, and what I was saying was true.
We'll see in May.
Yeah.
Couple more slides here. Appreciate the time and the questions. 2024 plan of finance, a lot going on, not only with the land secured team, but also on the general district side. Go through these fairly quickly, but please ask any questions that come up. As stated, when John presented the budget last year, there's currently no anticipated bond issues or bond needs, if you will, within the current budget cycle. Now, we are in the process of developing a long-term financial plan. This will help with future planning efforts, rate impacts, funding reserve levels, debt needs, financial impacts of that, as well as debt service coverage. We look forward to bringing something to the board first or second quarter this year, and then really incorporating the long-term financial planning model into future planning efforts. Moving on to the second bullet here, one of the district's variable rate debt series 2018As, these are variable rate debt that's reset daily. We were notified by Citigroup that they will be exiting the municipal business. And actually, I read it in the Wall Street Journal before I received any notification from them. And so we proactively reached out to them and asked if that was true and kind of what was going on. And yes, it is true. Citigroup will be leaving the municipal business. They're doing some changes on their end. And so what that means for the district is we need to find a new bank to remarket these securities. We've received preliminary interest from JP Morgan Securities, which is one of the district's approved underwriters within our underwriter pool, that they are interested in taking over the remarketing activities with terms similar to our current remarketing agreement. So we're in the process of getting that facilitated, hopefully prior to Citigroup officially exiting the business, and we look forward to bringing something to the board for approval in the second meeting of February. Moving on to the third bullet point here, Series 2021Bs. These are floating rate notes. These are reset weekly. $48 million is outstanding, and these are coming up due, essentially, with a scheduled mandatory tender in July of this year. So we have several months to take care of them, but we are in need of doing something before then. The next two slides, I'll share a little bit more information on that and what the plan is for that. Lastly, it's been a few years since our debt policy was it's reviewed every year, but it's been a few years since we've revised it or brought any changes to the board. We're currently in the process of going through it, seeing what's changed with litigation, seeing what's changed with district operations or strategies going forward, and we will be bringing that to the board in the near future. Now, we are considering a provision for reimbursement resolution, really as a debt and capital planning tool, provide flexibility with future funding needs. And then, as always, goal to preserve our AAA credit rating. Now, the Series 2021B FRNs, there's a lot of information on here on this slide. Really, just a lot of it recaps what I just mentioned. These can be addressed anytime between January 1st and July 1st of this year. We're currently in process. We issued an RFP back in December. Received several proposals from our underwriter pool on various options. Each option is listed below in the three bottom bullets. I won't go through these in too much detail. I will cover those when we bring something to the board for approval, just to show staff's recommendation and the reasons behind it. But I just wanted to highlight all of the proposals we received recommend refunding this series of debt with variable rate debt that resets daily. And the reason being is the daily resets have outperformed the weekly resets. As rates come up or come down, those resets react faster and to a larger degree. And so there is some savings when you have a debt security when it's volatile that reacts quicker to the market. Now, when we evaluated, and luckily for the district, we both have a daily rate reset and a weekly rate reset. So we have two, you know, of the options that are currently going on, and we're able to look back at our daily and our weekly resets, and I graphed them here, and it shows essentially what the underwriter firms were telling us and proposing, that the daily resets do perform better than our weekly resets. And so we're in the process of working on recommendation to the board, doing the analysis on it, getting things in line. We expect to bring something to the board in March, and I'll have more information to share at that time. Now, my last slide, I just want to close out with a summary of Eastern's debt profile. A couple quick bullet points. We actively manage it. We stay on top of it. Work closely with our FA, our bond counsel, and our financing team. We have healthy liquidity, and as you could see in the bottom graph, our debt service coverage is very stable, very consistent, and most of the debt falls off in late 2040s. That wraps up my presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Thank you very much. Excellent presentation.
Thank you.
You guys want to do a...
Sure.
Let's do about a 10-minute break.
Again?
So,
right.
We will resume our meeting. And we're going to be on item 5B, which is our Public and Governmental Affairs Quarterly Report and Legislative Update. April, good morning.
Good morning, President Pauley, members of the board. Jolene and I are both happy to present the PGA Quarterly Report for October through December of 2023, highlighting the activities from that quarter, but also looking at what we have going on this quarter. There it goes. Okay. So for our outreach overview, just some of the highlights. Our key topics were the Fog Healthy Sewers, which is our annual campaign. And one of the highlights from this past year's campaign was the fact that our general manager, Joe Mawad, was featured on KFrog on a story clip that they did. So that was a nice thing to get some attention there. We also continued our effort with reporting water waste, getting people to be aware of runoff and year-round conscientious for that. And then we have been highlighting our Help to Others program. We added some enhancements to our My Account portal, allowing our customers to donate to the program, and we also highlighted it through Giving Tuesday outreach campaigns. Over the quarter, we did 43 outreach meetings and events. That's up slightly from the previous quarter. We also had 26 media stories, which was a slight decrease, but not unexpected given when you get into the holidays, we generally see less attention on things like water and wastewater, which we don't understand, but it is something that happens. We did have a very large increase in our student participation, and that is due to the poster contest being initiated. So we had great participation with students taking part in that. We had some slight decreases in our online and print ads, as well as our hydration van events. Again, at the end of the year, that's to be expected. And then we continue to keep up with a very active CIP program through all of the construction letters and notifications. Moving on to our online presence, we did see a slight increase in our website statistics from last quarter. We are also working on the website redesign, which will be launched by summer of this year. And so we're looking forward to having even better analytics to be able to track and report once that new system is online. Social media, we saw about the same statistics as last quarter. However, we did have higher engagements mainly. And a couple of items I wanted to highlight. The Drop podcast, we just launched the second season. The first episode features General Manager Joe Mawad and providing a highlight, State of the District-esque. And that will be airing this week. And then our next month's guest speaker that I just found out we confirmed was Jerry Brown with Sites. So we're excited to have him as our next guest. And then LinkedIn has been our most active social media platform and has increased the most with more than 1,000 followers compared to last year. Community engagement spotlights. We had our business connection lunches resume for the first time in person since prior to 2020. So we were very happy to see that and had great attendance. We also had our annual French Valley Town Hall. And then a staff engagement spotlight. As you're all aware, we had our employee appreciation luncheon. Looking ahead to what we're currently working on and what's coming up, we just launched our education program with some updated curriculum, updated offerings for field trips and class presentations. It launched with the new year, so we have upgrades to the online system. It gives our teachers more flexibility and options for what they can choose for their classrooms. It incorporates more classroom work and pre-field trip activities so that when the students do come to one of our sites, they are very well informed and knowledgeable already about what they're going to see and what it's all about. And then all of the grade-based curriculum now centers on no matter what element of our services that they're looking at, whether it's a desalination, whether it's wastewater or water, they're seeing it in the full water cycle broad-based view. So we're making sure that no matter if they're looking at just part of our services, they understand how that fits into the full water cycle. And then, of course, we have our year in review report and strategic communications master plan coming up. Our first ad hoc for the 75th anniversary planning committee will be held by March. And for Quail Valley Subarea 4, the construction outreach, that number has been updated. We now have 488 of those right of entries collected, and staff continues to assist engineering in getting the information out to those residents and helping to collect those right of entries for that project to proceed. And then, as I mentioned, in addition to the website redesign project, we also have our intranet, the pipeline, which will be launching actually next month, and that's a little mini preview snapshot of how that looks, and we're excited to have that update as well. Wanted to highlight one special project that's coming up this quarter, and that is the non-functional turf replacement promotion campaign. It's really utilizing the data from the UCR non-functional turf rebate ROI study that our key message is you're converting, 20% or more, and you'll save up to 48%. In your water savings. So our target audiences for that is to develop materials for our own staff development services as they work with developers to inform them about this messaging and our homeowners, especially our new customers that have new homes, to make sure that they understand how their water budgets are made and not to replace that water-efficient landscaping that's in their yards, and then continue our outreach with our CII customers.
And April, if I can interject, when we recently had a presentation by Professor Kurt Schwabe on the non-functional turf, I know, Dr. Armstrong, you suggested, is there a way to potentially promote some of the findings that we had from the study? This is one of the ways that I think we can put those takeaways to benefit our community and to benefit our customers. We're also working with Metropolitan to see if we can elevate the findings at a committee at Metropolitan as well.
Yes. Let's see. Upcoming events. We have our Safety First Week next week, which is the second annual event focusing our staff on all things safety related. We also have the San Jacinto Valley Groundwater Treatment Facility groundbreaking that we will plan for spring. And then the Colorado River Aqueduct Tour is now scheduled for April of this year. So when we get that underway, we will certainly be reaching out and confirming invitation lists. So before I turn it over to Jolene for the governmental affairs portion, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions? I just want to say great job. I'm always proud. I think our social media is fantastic. So thank you for all you do.
Thank you.
All right, Jolene.
All right. Good morning, President Pauly and the board. I will be providing the update from the previous quarter in everything related to government affairs. Next slide, please. Also, just last month, the board held a legislative workshop where we provided a thorough recap of 2023. So I'll move through this content fairly quickly. But as you can see here, this last quarter, we held a very successful legislative briefing for the staff of all the electeds in our service area, from our U.S. senators to our members of Congress, our state and assembly offices, as well as our county board of supervisors. And we always take the opportunity to brief them kind of in depth on a couple of priority topics, as well as provide a tour for them. And that was this last quarter and a very successful event, and we're already planning the date for this year's legislative staff briefing event. This quarter, we also had a meeting with Assemblymember Kate Sanchez, as you can see in the bottom photo. Next slide, please. There we go. We also presented the legislative annual report to the board in early December, which really recapped the entire year on the legislative front and showcased the bills, the 345 bills that we took positions on and weighed in on via comment letters. And last year, there were over 1,000 bills that our legislative action team and our staff reviewed. Next slide, please. A few highlights on the federal side. We've been very engaged on pursuing funding through the Water Resources Development Act. As you heard Joe in his report today, all of our House members have advanced our language to increase our authorization from $50 to $100 million for our desal program. So that was a priority this last quarter and will continue to be a priority, as well as reauthorizing the low-income water assistance program that was a pilot program during COVID, and Senator Padilla is now introducing a bill that would permanently fund that program. EMWD and Riverside County were stellar at leveraging this program for the benefit of our customers. Not everybody around California did such an exceptional job. So there's a little bit of an obstacle to overcome because there's quite a bit of funding left in that pilot program nationwide, but we're still moving forward with supporting that nonetheless. A couple of bills to point out. We supported a Padilla bill related to water use efficiency, conservation, and sustainability. We also supported a bill called the WIPES Act, which it kind of sounds silly, but it's a really important issue nationwide, getting wipes companies to label their wipes properly so they don't cause blockages that result in sanitary sewer overflows. And then lastly, and probably most consequential, is the PFAS liability protection effort that we're trying to get legislative protection from CERCLA in the event that PFAS is made a hazardous waste under CERCLA, just to protect our agency and our customers from that liability. Next slide, please. On the state front, a number of bills were enacted that we weighed in on. One is the Freedman bill that would prohibit the use of potable water on non-functional turf in commercial, industrial, and institutional spaces. A Garcia bill that gave public agencies flexibility in terms of meeting the mandates for zero-emission vehicles. And then we also partnered with the Regional Water Authority in Sacramento and supported this bill by Ashley that would create a greater focus on advancing groundwater recharge. And Joe and I have already met with RWA and are continuing that partnership with our Northern Californian partners this year. And lastly, a bill by Allen that we were neutral on. We started off in an opposed position as this bill was really proposing to overhaul water rights in a way that didn't work for us. So through a lot of opposition, that bill was amended to a point where we were able to go neutral on it, which was a success. Next slide, please. Also, last quarter, we did our fall D.C. advocacy trip where we were able to meet with all of our members in person as well as staff from Senator Butler's office and Padilla's office. John Watts, the staff who we met with in Senator Butler's office, who was a longtime Feinstein staffer, has, since we met with him, has since moved on to become Commissioner Camille Touton's senior counsel, so we'll get to continue to work with him, which is very fortunate. And then we also had a very productive meeting with the Army Corps of Engineers. Last on the slide, last quarter we hosted the Riverside County Water Task Force Forum, where they used the board meeting for some discussions and then took off for the tour of Diamond Valley Lake from our boardroom. Next slide, please. So a little snapshot of what's to come. As you're aware, we thank you for adopting the legislative priorities and principles. Those documents really provide the foundation from which our team and our advocates advocate on behalf of the district. We have our Sacramento advocacy trip scheduled for, it's now March 19th, Aqua DC conference in late February, and then the water reuse symposium and starting on March 11th. Pakal and I continue to represent the district on the state and federal legislative committees of all of our associations, and There's some transition on the association front. Dave Reynolds, Aqua's longtime lobbyist, a DC lobbyist, has retired, and in his place, Aqua has appointed Ian Lyle, who was the former lobbyist of National Water Resources Association, and he will hit the ground running in that new position. And then upon Jennifer West's retirement from the Water Reuse Association, they're in the middle of interviews, and we should hear within the next month or so who the next executive director will be of that association. Not on the slides here, but I did want to mention that this is a time of year when dozens of bills are being introduced in the state legislature, and the team is scouring dozens of bills every morning as they're being introduced. I did want to put on your radar that last night we caught a Assemblyman Jackson bill that was just introduced that would enact the San Jacinto Wildlife Area Preservation Act that would prohibit the Department of Fish and Wildlife from selling or developing that area, and would have a number of other requirements like holding an annual hearing about the wildlife area. But we intend to schedule a meeting with the Assemblyman to learn more about what he intends to do with that piece of legislation. And that concludes my report, unless there are any questions.
Questions?
Yes.
Director Armstrong.
Yeah, no, I saw that last bullet on the last slide. It said that you were appointed the chair of the Aqua Federal Affairs Committee. Jolene?
Yes.
Okay, well, I just wanted to say.
I was appointed.
No, congratulations on that. And I think that's really great, and I think that's really important for Eastern. And does that automatically put you also on the board of Aqua then?
Yes, Director Armstrong, that's correct. With the chair position of that committee, I am also on the board of directors. So I believe the chair of Region 9 is on that board, and then I will be, I think, the second representative on Aqua's board from Region 9.
Well, congratulations, and appreciate you taking on that responsibility.
Any other questions?
Thank you. And if you're interested, you will have access to a lot more Aqua information, and I'm happy to provide updates.
Great.
All right. Thank you very much. Great report from both of you. We will move on to item 6 this morning, which is to receive and file of various reports. I will make the motion to do so. Director Armstrong would like to second that. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauley?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And that passes 4-0 with director record absence. That will go to our calendar review. Good morning.
Good morning, President Pauley, members of the board. This morning, I have a couple of events for your review and consideration. The first event is Friday, January 26, and that's the Riverside County Infrastructure Meeting, which is being hosted by Senator Ochoa Bog, and it's taking place in Beaumont. Also on Friday, January 26, is the Southern California Water Coalition quarterly luncheon, and it's in Riverside. Next, on Monday, January 29th through Thursday, February 1st, is the Nevada Water Resource Association Annual Conference Week, and it's in Las Vegas. And as Jolene mentioned, Tuesday, March 19th is the 2024 Sacramento Lobby Day. You can find more details in the flyers attached to this packet. Turning to page 2, you will find the current listing of the Board Members Master's calendar for the next 2 weeks. If you could please review the information and let me know of any updates. On page 3 is the list of upcoming events with participants. Beginning on Thursday, January 25th, is the Metropolitan Water District Tunnel Boring Machine Naming Ceremony, and it's in Riverside. Friday, January 26th, as mentioned, is the Southern California Water Coalition Luncheon. On Friday, January 26th, is also the Moreno Valley 2024 Installation and Citizen of the Year Banquet. Wednesday, February 21st through Friday, February 23rd, is the Water the Urban Water Institute Spring 2024 Conference. Tuesday, February 27th through Thursday, February 29th is the AQUA DC 2024 Annual Conference. And lastly is the on Monday, March 10th through Thursday, March 14th is the Water Reuse 2024 Symposium. Continuing on page 3 is the board meeting dates through April, and all are on schedule. On top of page 4 is the board committee meetings and joint interagency meetings. I do want to point out that the January 18th joint meeting with Western has been canceled. There are no out-of-office dates to review. And lastly, for the holiday schedule, February 19th is President's Day, and EMWD offices are closed this day. Are there any questions or comments?
None for me.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We will go on to Director's Activities Reports, and we will start with Director Armstrong.
Okay. Metropolitan meetings, December 5th was a special board meeting. It was a unique board meeting for Metropolitan. It was actually held in person at the Gene Camp out near Lake Havasu, and there's an effort, I think, at Metropolitan to kind of improve morale with the desert communities out there and the employees that are working out there. So holding a meeting out there was sort of a gesture, I think, to show the importance of those employees. Subcommittee on Long-Term Planning, that's really the camp for water, the climate adaptation master planning for water effort that's taking place, and Joe participates in that as well. And really what the last efforts have been developing evaluation criteria for how to evaluate projects going forward to see what objectives they meet to help solve the Camp for Water process. And now we're moving on to tomorrow to really talk about time-bound targets, you know, like we need X amount of supply by X amount date or X amount of storage by X date, and kind of looking and defining those things, all part of the effort of defining this process to evaluate projects going forward in the future. Metropolitan Water District with Rancho Water on December 6th. I think that was really a meeting initiated by Rancho. Joe and I attended that meeting with Director Rossi and Rob Grantham, and they just, I think, wanted to just talk about some Metropolitan items and kind of listen and share and convey their thoughts and ideas. And I thought it was a really productive meeting, and we listened and had good dialogue, and I think just agreed to continue to listen. They're obviously interested in what's happening at Metropolitan, how rates affect them, and supply and some of the decisions moving forward. So I thought that was a good meeting. Riverside County Water Task Force on the 15th. I attended that. I thought the tour, it was the in-person meeting since it was the end of the year. The tour at Diamond Valley Lake was really, really good. It was really well attended. I met the real Director Slauson on that tour, and really nice. Then we came back here, and Joe and Craig Miller from Western both gave some good updates to everybody that attended. But it was really a good meeting. And a good update with the general manager and Metropolitan Items discussion January 3rd. That's really Joe and Jolene and I just getting together and all of us just sharing and talking about what's going on at Metropolitan, so we're all kind of on the same page on things. Those are my updates.
Thank you. Before we go on, can I ask a question? Are you allowed to share the name of the boring tunnel before the ceremony?
I don't know what it is.
Oh, okay.
President Pauly, what I can add is Metropolitan conducted a competition among students to put forward the best name for the tunnel, and I'm pleased to report that the student that was selected is from our service area. I think there'll be an unveiling of that name at the ceremony that Director Armstrong and I will be attending next week.
I may see if I can fit that into my schedule. So, okay. Not giving away any secrets yet. Very good. All right, Director Corona.
Okay, so all I have is the Rancho California Water District Board meeting. The highlight was a similar legislative report from Daniel Coates that was presented at our meeting. So that's all I have.
All right. I had a meeting with the general manager. That is always good as usual. I was not able to attend the Winchester MAC last week. Did go to a special meeting with WRCOG on some long-term planning. And again, Director Denstedt and myself really made sure that water was continuing to be a part of WRCOG and the Water Task Force, as you just mentioned, and also some both her and I made the point that as water legislation and other things go through, it's great that the water agencies may chime in, but we're looking for other parts of the cities and other RCOG participants to maybe start signing on to letters since it's important regionally. And I think a lot of the cities took that to heart of, without the water, they don't function very well. So they need to get a little more involved in some of the legislative and budgeting priorities. So that was a good discussion there. And then I had a great outreach meeting with April to discuss some things I'm interested in, such as our expanding our educational opportunities. I'm really excited about the fact that we're getting more kids and teachers involved. So that was a really good meeting. The record's not here. Director Slauson.
Yes, there was no Hispanic Chamber of Commerce breakfast this month. And yesterday at SAPA, we had a legislative update and increased compensation for commissioners by 5%. And there was a resolution adopted recognizing the retirement of Mike Marcus from Orange County Water District. Several Joe Spoke and Craig and Yashavi from Inland Empire Utilities spoke. And he has a long history, very successful career. That's it.
All right, very good. Do we have any director's comments or future agenda items?
Sure, I have one. All right. So this Director Slauson at Beaumont you were talking about, that would be my son, but did you notice he had hair? So, that's it.
It's just more dispersed.
You know, I did go in for ID for fingerprinting when we did adoption, and so I had to go to the police department, and I put down my description. I said bald, and the policeman came out, and he says, Slauson? I go, he goes, you're not bald. I said, can I have that in writing? He just said no. He walked away.
I'm glad that that Riverside County is, we have two great Director Slaussons in the Water Committee of Riverside County. So, Mr. General Counsel, understand we do not need a closed session today?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
All right. With that, we will adjourn. Thank you very much.
Thank you.